Barbarian Tribes of Rome, the Celts. Today we're going to look at the Celtic war system, or Celtic warriors. Now, the Celts enter our collective history with the Greeks and the Romans, who spoke of the Celts as barbarians, or fierce warriors, who dominated the territory in northern Europe that the Greeks and the Romans had barely been able to explore in the early years of their history. However, the term barbarian in today's language implies the Celts were wild, unorganized fighters who, despite their strength, may not have been capable of posing a significant threat to a large, well-trained army. But this was simply not the case. The Romans lived in perpetual fear of the Celts, who lived in the Iberian Peninsula or who roamed throughout Gaul, could and would march into Rome and wipe them off the face of the earth. Sometimes that almost happened, such as in 390 BCE. This fear the Greeks and the Romans propagated has helped exaggerate the image we have of the Celtic warriors today. It's true they were effective on the battlefield, but many modern conceptions of Celtic warfare are the product of fantasy video games and embellished literature. This image shows Celts wearing armor or behaving in a way that's simply not supported by the evidence available to us in the modern day. Of course, anything is possible, but it's important to reconstruct the Celtic warrior using what we know, not what we wish were true. One thing we do know, however, was that war was an integral part of Celtic society, and this meant that the Celtic warrior was held in high regard. Status and prestige were closely associated with one's ability to fight in war, and nobles won and earned loyal subjects based on their ability to raid and conquer surrounding territories. But because of the rich diversity that existed amongst the various Celtic cultures that were spread across Europe, the Celts developed many different ways of fighting. However, due to those cultural similarities, we can find some parallels across different Celtic cultures when it comes to ways in which they waged war. As mentioned, there's no uniform political structure in the ancient Celtic culture. Instead, loyalty was given to a chieftain or a nobleman in exchange for security. But to get this security, one needed to be ready and willing to offer labor and other goods in exchange, a system not too different from feudalism. However, in this system, the nobles were dependent on these laborers for production, so they needed to do something to prove they were deserving of that loyalty, and the easiest way to do this was to be successful raiding nearby tribes, even if those tribes were also Celtic. Warfare and raiding were also some of the principal ways of acquiring wealth in the ancient Celtic society. Raids would allow a chieftain or warlord not only to acquire the resources of a nearby tribe, which he could trade to other cultures in exchange for goods, but it also allowed him to gather people together to be sold into slavery in Greece or in Rome, a lucrative business that became an important part of Celtic culture. However, beyond the importance of war amongst the Celtic nobility, it was also significant to the freemen, the class of people who were situated just below the elite classes in Celtic society. Successes in battle was a chance for the average Celtic man to prove his worth in society, and because of this, it was often easy for a nobleman to gather men to fight in a raid against a nearby tribe. Furthermore, Celtic men often lent their services as mercenaries, as this gave them an opportunity to show off their skills as a warrior and earn status in Celtic society. The most famous example of this comes from the Second Punic War. The leader of Carthage at the time, Hannibal, hired thousands of Celts to help him invade Italy and defeat Rome. And while this proved to be unsuccessful in the end, this experience instilled in the Romans a fear towards the Celts that lasted all the way until the Romans managed to conquer both Gaul and Britain. The Roman historian Polybius wrote about how the Romans saw their Celtic enemies, saying they were terrified by the fine order of the Celtic host and the dreadful din, for there were innumerable hornblowers and trumpeters, and the whole army was shouting their war cries. Very terrifying were the appearance and gestures of the naked warriors in front, all in the prime of life and finely built men, and all in leading companies richly adorned with gold torques and armlets. It's believed the Celtic tradition of trying to scare their opponents by blowing horns, shouting, and taunting, and making lots of noise were clearly linked to the Celtic understanding that war was a chance for someone to prove their worth to society. The idea was being more fearsome earned one more respect within society, but only if they could support this posturing with good fighting skills. However, this quote mentions Celtic warriors fighting naked as a way of trying to intimidate their opponents. And while this may have happened from time to time or within a certain tribe or mercenary group, it is difficult to say if this was a typical Celtic tradition. Now, because of the lack of formal political and social institutions in Celtic society, there were no formal methods of training soldiers for war. Instead, a man who wanted to advance his fighting skills to be able to one day join in on a raid or an invasion had to find other ways of training so that they could live up to the reputation of Celtic soldiers that they had throughout most of the ancient period. Some of these activities, including hunting, cattle rustling, slave raiding, and engaging in smaller skirmishes with local tribes that were led by nobles who were feuding amongst themselves. These fights were considered to be less aggressive than the all-out wars against the Romans or another powerful Celtic tribe, but they gave a young Celtic warrior the opportunity to practice his weapon handling skills and also mentally prepare for life at war. Another way to train was to join a mercenary group. These bands of soldiers often formed close unions, and they had systems in place to train younger soldiers to be able to fight with the same intensity as the group. However, entry into these elite mercenary groups was restricted to only the most skilled warriors, meaning a fighter who needed to spend considerable time honing his skills elsewhere before he could hope to be granted a place amongst the ranks of the mercenaries. This lack of political structure, combined with the connection between one's self-worth and fighting, meant that Celtic warriors often entered the battlefield primarily for themselves. There's little evidence of a Celtic warrior being exceptionally loyal towards a king, although there are examples of Celtic warlords gaining considerable popularity while leading raids against invaders. One of the best examples of this is the uprising led by Boudica in Britain during the first century. Now, the weapons they used were, of course, spread all around Celtic territory. Celtic warriors used many different types of weapons. Different Celtic tribes fashioned different weapons, and these often became models for the Romans as their military grew and eventually became the most dominant throughout all of Europe. The most common types of weapons used by the Celts included spears, two-handed hammers, axes, and as ironworking became more prominent in Celtic culture, swords. The quality of the swords ranged considerably, with the most archaeological evidence suggesting that the common folk had small, thin iron swords. Some sources written by those living at the time report of swords that would bend or break when they first came into contact with another hard object, such as another sword or shield. But there are plenty of examples of Celtic tribes carrying well-crafted, high-quality swords, especially in Britain, although there is some speculation that these may have been used for rituals rather than fighting. These swords have infiltrated public perception to give the Celts a reputation for wielding high-quality swords when they went in the battle, but this is most likely not the case. Instead, most Celtic warriors probably carried a small sword or a dagger and a spear. On the Iberian Peninsula, however, the Celt-Iberian tribes who fought against the Romans carried a rather effective double-edged sword that was said to be good for stabbing, and many believe this became the model for the types of swords the Roman legions used throughout Rome's rise to power. Other weapons the Celts used, including long-range fighting tools such as javelins, harpoons, bows, and slings. These weapons would have been used to launch projectiles into oncoming troops, such as to inflict damage before hand-to-hand combat began. There is evidence that some Celtic tribes, especially those associated or located throughout the Alps, put poison on the weapons. They would launch into enemy ranks so as to increase their effectiveness, and some tribes may have had early versions of a crossbow. But neither of these cases represents the norm across the various Celtic tribes in Europe. Although not a weapon, the Celts also carried some form of an instrument, such as a horn, to use when entering battle. A great example of this is Carnac, which was a bronze trumpet believed to have been used by the Celts who roamed Europe from 300 BCE to 200 CE. It was common for Celts to blow this horn repeatedly as they prepared to charge, and it's believed that this was another way for a warrior to demonstrate his strength and power while also striking fear into the hearts of the enemies. In terms of armor, the Celts are considered to have been the first people in Europe to wear iron chainmail, although this would not have been standard issue for the average Celtic warrior. Instead, this type of protection was reserved for the nobility or anyone who had the means to craft such armor. The same with the case of iron chest plates. They existed in Celtic military, but they were hardly the norm. Instead, it was much more common for the average Celtic warrior to wear leather armor or no armor at all. Bronze armor was available, but again, being able to wear it in battle depended considerably on one's means. Some other examples of more elaborate types of armor are often attributed to the Celts, but this is likely more an exaggeration of reality so as to enhance the already glorified image we have of Celtic warriors. Instead, the reality is that while their average Celtic warrior was probably very well trained and capable, he was likely poorly equipped due to the inequality that existed within Celtic society at the time. However, one interesting thing that we can learn from Celtic warriors from classical texts, and that has been affirmed to one degree or another from the archaeological research, is that many Celtic warriors used to wear bright, colorful clothing in the battle, presumably as a way of intimidating their enemy, or perhaps as a way of demonstrating to their fellow warriors their merit as a soldier. But again, it's hard to know if this was something practiced by all Celtic soldiers, or if it was a tradition reserved for those with means to acquire what they would have probably been valuable ancient commodities. The modern image of Celtic warriors has almost always included helmets, and some have gone so far as to say the Romans copied the Celts when designing and building helmets for their legionaries, but it's difficult to say if this is true or not. It's equally as likely the Celts copied the Romans after their first contact with them. Another common image of Celtic warriors is the horned helmet. Again, this may have existed. There is evidence of horned helmets dating back all the way to the British Iron Age, 800 BCE to CE 100. However, we do know that early Celts usually fought without helmets, and it wasn't until closing century of the Celtic migration, that'd be the 200s BCE, that helmets started becoming more common atop Celtic heads. These were still relatively rare, though, suggesting that owning the piece of armor was dependent, once again, on wealth and status. Because there are no texts written by the Celts themselves, we cannot know for sure how their armies were even organized. However, it is clear that they did not have an organized military as we understand it today, or as the Greeks or Romans understood it. Instead, the Celtic armies were organized around warlords or chieftains. At times, various warlords would band together to fight against a common enemy, but these collaborations were usually brief. The Celts did not need to worry about requiring men from conquered territories to join the army, because fighting was expected. Those who resisted fighting were often killed, sold to the Greeks or the Romans as slaves, or banished from society. However, there were various types of Celtic soldiers, and when they fought together, they were often organized into different groups. For example, some Celtic soldiers fought on horseback, and others used chariots, although by the 3rd century BCE, most Celtic tribes in Europe, with the exception of the Britons, had abandoned chariots in favor of cavalry, helping them be more effective when fighting their enemies. When combined with regular infantry, these mounted warriors would be used as we would expect the cavalry to be used, the scout, the skirmish, and the charge. Typically, the Celts fought on land, but there's some evidence that suggests that the Veneti tribe, which occupied the northern coast of France near the modern region of Brittany, had a strong seafaring tradition. They were conquered by Caesar in 56 BCE, but his commentaries on the conflict suggested these Celts were a formidable opponent both on land and sea. However, because no Celtic ships have been found, and because the lack of written Celtic sources, little is known about the naval traditions elsewhere in the Celtic world. So, as you can see, the image we have today of the Celtic warrior is not a particularly good reflection of what these warriors were actually like. It's possible some of the myths that exist today are grounded in truth, but the vast majority are just that, myth. However, these images of fierce, well-armed, and well-armored warriors might not be completely true. We should not take this as proof that the Celts were nothing more than barbarians who could fight. Instead, we should consider the facts. It's likely true that your average Celtic warrior was at least 4 inches taller than the average Roman or Greek. and there's some evidence to suggest that the warriors used to dye their hair bright white using lime, which would have made them look terrifying. Plus, due to their long tradition of hunting, raiding, and waging war, the average Celtic warriors were skilled and brave, and this would have made him a challenging opponent. Of course, in the end, the Celts proved to be no match for the armies of Rome, but this is probably more due to their lack of organization, both politically and militarily, than it is to their fighting ability. But even without those critical components of successful military, the Celts wreaked havoc on the Romans in their attempt to control central, western, and northern Europe for the better part of 700 years. And despite the repeated Roman attempts to wipe them off the face of the earth, they remained, and their culture still exists to this day. So it's an interesting commentary, particularly when you have to dig through the various primary sources from ancient times. And of course, the Greeks were very much impressed with them. The size of them is one of the things that got their attention. Now, the sources for this, the Germanic people, their origin, expansion, and culture by Owen, the civilization of the steppes by Conrad, and the history of the barbarians, which is a whole series on different groups, and this would, of course, be the Celt version. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment. Check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.